Welcome to the Otaku Melancholy Podcast, the anime and otaku culture podcast that's coming live at you from the ever after. My name is Matt, reminding you to lock up your door so you don't have any worms leak out as well. And if you're here, I bet you can read, or at least I'm going to hope you can read to some degree. And maybe just a little bit. We don't have to have perfect reading mastery at this point, but hopefully we've got at least a little bit so that we can tell that today's episode is going to be a little review and a little self-discussion on Makoto Shinkai's latest film, Suzume, which dropped in theaters almost two weeks ago. But hey, still always relevant because it's Makoto Shinkai. That man can just make anything and people will eat it all kinds of up. And hey, since you'll eat that all kinds of up, I'm going to talk about it because I'd like for you to have something that you could eat all up, like a podcast episode. So here we are. And this will probably be a shorter episode because I don't want to go on a full-ass discussion about everything because, it's a film. I'm not going to tell you everything that happens in a film. That's just illogical. I can't talk to myself about a film. I just can't do it. But I did have to see this movie twice because I am unfortunately cursed to anytime I go to see a Makoto Shinkai film in the theaters to see it late. And what I mean is that it never fails. It never, ever fails that if I ever go to see Makoto Shinkai's latest movie, because it happened with Weathering With You, it happened with Your Name, and it happened with Suzume as well. And at this point, I think it's just some sort of curse that I made with like the devil or something to have. He was like, you will never be able to see a Makoto Shinkai film on time the first time. But at the cost, you get really nice wrists. And I was like, oh shit, really nice wrists. Well, hey, that sounds like a really good deal for me. Sign me up, daddy-o. And so here we are. I mean, if you've seen my wrists, you'd be in love with them. They're some good wrists. Like, goodness. Sometimes I look at my own wrists and I'm like, damn, I wish I was in like the 1700s so I can hide these babies. So it'd be a real treat when you see them. Anyways, that's beside the point. But yeah, anytime I go to see a Makoto Shinkai film for the first time, I always manage to be late for it because of something that happens. Usually it's some people. But I'm not going to blame on this episode. So hey. But I had to go see Suzume once again. I wasn't even that late for Suzume. It wasn't like Weathering With You where I came in and I was like, why is it so rainy in this town? What's going on? But I did get pretty late for Suzume enough to where I was like, I don't understand why she's here. But I guess I'm just going to roll with it. So I recently had to go rewatch it again, mostly because I had an afternoon to kill and I needed like to kill up like 3 hours before something was ready for me to do. I don't want to go into too much details because it's kind of absurdly personal. So I just ended up rewatching Suzume and going to the theaters and rewatching Suzume. And I don't know, I think, we'll get into that, my core thoughts and all of that when we get into the discussion of the movie proper. I will not be going too heavy-handed on spoilers for this episode, mostly just because it is fresh out of birthing. The movie is fresh, it's on the scene. If you really want an in-depth section, we'll probably spoiler tag it. Just in case you do want that. But honestly, I don't want to go too heavy in the spoilers because it is just fresh. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are going to wait for it to inevitably come to Crunchyroll. Which it more than likely will. Or at least I'm going to assume it will. So anyways, yeah. But before we dive into that discussion, let's go ahead and talk about what I've been doing this week. At the time of this recording, I've already gotten an episode recorded with the ever-delightful Alex from the Anybuddies podcast, but just because Suzume is still really relevant and I do want to talk about it a little bit, I've recorded this episode, so there you go. But hopefully this episode will be out before and you can just get this and then you can listen to me and Alex talk about a really great topic that they come up with. Really great person. Always such a blast to just hang out with. So great times all around. We've been having just a sequence of great guest hosts on this podcast. And it's going to continue. It's going to continue for sure. Or at least I hope it does. If it doesn't, then hey, you and I, we've been talking to each other long enough. I think we can manage a good solo episode every now and then like this one. But anyways, you'll already probably get a check-in from me courtesy of the episode with Alex, but just in case, I'll give you one more checkup, just in case you're curious of what I do when you're not listening to this podcast. So I've mostly just really been playing Persona 5 as far as any video gameplay goes, and I've been reading books, but I know not everybody really gives a shit about what I read, so I'm not gonna, like, just pile that on as far as what I've been doing. But no, I've been playing a lot of Persona 5 Royal, or I've been trying to play a lot of Persona 5 Royal. As I said in the episode with Alex, I did recently hang out with Audrey, and that was a whole lot of fun, and it kind of got me, I don't know why, but hanging out with Audrey made me really go, why don't I watch some more VTuber content? I don't know what, like, propelled me to want to just watch more VTubers, but after I got back from Audrey's, I basically said, man, I should just really VTube it up. I really did like a lot of the streams I saw, so I've been watching a lot of VTubers regularly now, as I'm playing Persona 5 Royal, which is still, at 25 hours in, I'm still having a whole lot of fun with it. I mean, it's Persona 5. I've already raved about how great of a game it is, and if you don't know, then now you know, and I wholly recommend it to everybody, even people who don't like turn-based RPGs, just because it is so it's just so fluid, it just works so well. It is such a game that barely feels like a turn-based RPG, because the menus don't clog up your entire interface, everything is just quick, easy, you do it, and it's done. And plus, it's kind of got a little bit of that Pokemon feel too in it, because you just fuse these personas, and you got to catch the personas, basically. And you get to make all that. And it's so much fun. I really, really cannot recommend Persona enough. Persona 5 particularly, because it's the most well-polished of them. Persona 4 is my personal favorite. Even as I'm playing Persona 5, I feel like the characters in Persona 4 are more fleshed out in better ways. I feel like they're more nuanced. There's a lot of characters in there that have dynamics that I really like a whole lot more in the Persona 5 gang. But it's kind of weird. I think Persona 4 I might be a little bit nostalgia blind on as well, just because that's the one I played the most of. I played it on the PlayStation 2, and then it came to the Vita, and I played that, and now I've got it on Steam for whenever I finish Persona 5, be that like 80 hours from now, but still. So, I know that Persona gets a lot of memes and jokes about, you know, like, hey, Persona fan, don't you mean child enjoyer? But Persona is really great. It's a great ass series, and hopefully you'll try it, you know, get it on sale or something. I don't know. But really and truly, that's all I really have to note. Because of everything that's been going on, I've not been able to consume anime on the regular like I want to, and part of it is just because I've just not been in that city down mood lately. Although I say that, but I just absolutely have been barreling through Boys Abyss, as I mentioned in the regular podcast episode. I am absolutely just barreling through Boys Abyss. It is, honestly, I get such domestic girlfriend vibes off of it in the good way. I mean, we're all joking around about how bad domestic girlfriend is, but that was just popular mentality, I feel like, at this point. Domestic girlfriend was good. It's 2023. We can say what we want. We don't have to be held down by the popular consensus and the opinions of people who don't know what they're talking about. Domestic girlfriend was good, and we need to accept that domestic girlfriend was good. And by association, Boys Abyss is good. Because Boys Abyss is kind of just like the darker turn of domestic girlfriend, because this main dude is just I don't even want to talk about it, because it hits so wrong so many times when I'm actually trying to read it. I'm like, I'm in a good mood, and then Boys Abyss, the chapter I'm reading, will say, yeah, how about we fix that, champ? Let's put you in a bad mood, or a sad mood, or a tense mood, or I don't know, let's just piss you off. And I'm like, okay, thank you. Thanks, Boys Abyss. I love it. I love it, Boys Abyss. Cries. So that's really the big weeb stuff that's been consuming me is Persona 5 and Boys Abyss. I don't know why it took me so long to jump on the Boys Abyss train. It's a great train. It's got cushions. It's nice. It's a nice train. I mean, I'm reading it. It's kind of like a Pop-Tart in a way, too. I'm reading it. I don't know if I'm enjoying it, but by God, I'm here reading it. And it's just like a Pop-Tart. I'm eating it. I don't know if I'm enjoying it, but I'm definitely eating it. And that is the Boys Abyss experience. And I got some other manga that I'm reading now too. The One Piece update is, since I talked in the Alex episode, I have not made any progress with One Piece. I really haven't. I have just, Boys Abyss has consumed my manga reading time, so we are still like somewhere in the 750s for One Piece. But hey, Dressrosa is really it's actually good. One Piece is good again. So we'll get there when we get there. So maybe I'll make some when I make some more One Piece progress when I finish Boys Abyss. But we'll see. We'll see. And speaking of things we'll see, we'll see a little break real quick. Hey folks, it's Matt here to talk just a tiny bit about Boomslank. Boomslank is an anime apparel and lifestyle brand that has super unique style and art across their entire lineup of phone cases, posters, hoodies, t-shirts, and stickers. I actually really, really love their stuff, which is why I'm so hyped to talk about them, because you know I'm an actual fan of theirs and their lead artist, Shinobi P. I have their Mania phone case and their Leo hoodie, and they're both these kind of things that my coworkers who aren't into anime, usually, and my friends who are definitely into anime, actually say something to me about, because they both have this kind of spirit and design that you're not really going to see anywhere else in the market as far as anime apparel and those kind of products go. So that being said, I'm super excited to say that if you want to get some Boomslank merch and help support the podcast in the process, then you can go to their website, boomslank.com, and use our coupon code at checkout, Otaku Melancholy Podcast, that's all one word, and you'll get 10% off your purchase. Or if you just want to go straight to their website, you can go to the www.boomslank.com/otakumelancholypodcast to just have that coupon code automatically applied when you go to checkout. So yeah, a huge thanks to Boomslank for reaching out and offering to help and support this podcast, because it means so much for, you know, a brand that I actually like and that Audrey and I both really admire to help support us. And just in case you didn't know how to spell that, it's boomslank.com. And there's even a link to their website with our coupon code in the show notes of whatever platform you're listening to this episode on. Thank you guys for listening to this. Back to the episode. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the break. But if you didn't enjoy the break, then you go to patreon.com/otakumelancholy and support us for as little as $3 a month to get break-free episodes, bonus episodes when applicable, a super secret Discord role, and a super secret Discord channel, as well as getting your name shouted out at the end of every single episode. And also, my undying appreciation, which is a big thing here. I really do appreciate the support that our Patreon patrons give us. But I also just appreciate you for listening, no matter what you do, even if you just support us by saying, hey, this podcast is ass. Hey, that's still some kind of support, isn't it? But speaking of ass support, today we talk about a romance anime that's got a chair as a love interest. Ayo, I just lined that transition up. Good job, Matt. You're so handsome with your nice little wrists, Matt. Oh, thanks, Matt. You're welcome, Matt. Oh, this is, yeah, so yeah. Today's core subject is Suzume, as it is known over here, or as it's actually known in Japanese, Suzume no Tojimari, or Suzume's locking up, or Suzume's locking up the doors, as I think it was called at some point when it was announced or whatever. Suzume locking up the doors sounds really cool to me, but I bet if you put that on a movie screen, some Americans who would normally be like, I'll try out this new movie, be like, oh shit, she's locking up doors. God, what's in those doors? I don't want to involve myself with that. So I don't know. Maybe Suzume just works better. I don't know. So it's another Makoto Shinkai film. Let's just get this out of the way. It is another Makoto Shinkai film. And you know the Makoto Shinkai formula at this point, because it is in fact a formula by the third go around. Except this time the main character is a girl. Way to mix it up there, my good old friend Maki. But yeah, so it is actually a little bit different, but a whole lot of the same in a lot of ways. It's still got that classic Makoto Shinkai vibe where all the teenagers are just illogically quick and prone to falling in love with each other or having extremely brash opinions and feelings about each other. It doesn't matter. Just everybody is always feeling something in a Makoto Shinkai film, or at least ever since Your Name. He was like, hey, I discovered that if I write teenagers with feelings and extra feelings, then I will be beloved. And he said, yes, yes, finally I've achieved perfection. But it's another Shinkai film. And here is the thing. Just started off on the right foot, or a foot that would probably tell you everything you might want to know about this movie. It is my favorite Shinkai film after seeing it twice. And I'm a little bit befuddled as to why I like it so much more than Weathering With You and Your Name. Because let's be really honest, Your Name, as much as I would rather not admit that Your Name is almost a masterpiece, Your Name is probably almost a masterpiece. And I don't think anybody can offer too many arguments about why it isn't, outside of the fact that it is just a whole lot of, there's a good bit of illogical behavior that happens. But hey, it's a film. We got to suspend our disbelief. I mean, I'm literally watching a movie about a chair and a girl going off on a whirlwind-ass adventure. There is not a whole lot of brain power that I need to be investing in this film. So there you go. But, I mean, I'm not a fan of Shinkai's films. Garden of Words was okay. I wasn't really the subject matter. I was kind of like, geez, what's going on here? What's going on here? And honestly, before this, Suzume, my favorite Shinkai film was actually 5 cm/s, mostly because I thought it did have a very grounded portrayal of teenager difficulties. And also, when I saw 5 cm/s, I was a teenager. And so it just all kind of aligned to me, and those feelings that 5 cm/s stirred in me are so ingrained with how I perceive Shinkai. But by the time that Your Name came out, I was an adult, and I didn't really, I don't know, I just wasn't connecting or resonating a whole lot with Your Name like I feel like a lot of other people were. And maybe that's just because I'm just going like, how can you care so much about someone you're just playing swapsies with? I don't know. Maybe that's just me being a cynic about the whole thing. Probably is. But Your Name is still a great film. I don't think that can be debated too much, at least. I'm just going to say it can't be debated too much unless you want to debate with it. Debate it with me right now, but I won't respond because I am currently in the past talking to you in the future, which is already feels like a Shinkai film, you know? Big Shinkai film, talk to you in the past, future, isn't that just, isn't that one already? I think it is. So yeah, I really only went to go see this movie because it is a Shinkai film, and as a weeb, I am obligated to see Shinkai films, I am obligated to see Miyazaki films, and I am obligated to see an anime movie of any franchise that comes out that I think potentially continues the story. It is just the law that has been ingrained in me, and so the Shinkai film came out, and I said, hey, Kiri, let's go watch the Shinkai film, and she is just, Kiri as a person, she just always does whatever she just goes along with things, and hey, that's really cool thing. You can just put any anime in front of her, any show, anything, she'll watch it. Great attribute to have. So, went to go see the Shinkai film, was late the first time, as I mentioned, it's just the curse that I have to do for these excellent wrists, and later on, I had a lot of time to kill, so I saw it again. And the first time, I was like, yeah, I'm really impressed with this. And the second time I said, oh, wow, I had just as much fun as I did the first time. But I'm getting ahead of myself and just talking about how I feel about the film when you don't even know what the film's about, or do you? You are probably expecting me to know what the film is about. And joke's on you, I don't. But no, for real. Okay, so basically the plot is that Suzume Iwato is a high school girl, as you are known to be in Japan, and she one day encounters this dude who looks handsome. He is a very handsome man, who she finds out his name Sato later, and he says, hey, are there any ruins, anything like that over here? You know, any ruined things, can I go check them out? And she says, yeah, I think there's one over at the local resort thing or whatever. And he goes, thanks, bud, goodbye. And she says, well, that's weird, I should go check it out too, in case he's gonna sell drugs. Not really, this is not what happens, I'm being hyperbolic. So she goes, and he is doing some crazy wild wiki-dicky shit with a door, and she says, damn, that's wild. Also, did the cat statue I just pick up become a cat and leave? Oh, well, that's not a problem. I can see stars through the door. Can't go through it, though. And so Sota says, hey, what are you doing? Stop with that. And they lock up the door. But not, of course, after a worm comes out, a big red worm, which I was like, oh, damn. This is looking like some gore screaming show stuff right here. But they manage to lock the door, and the worm does end up come tumbling down, and everyone's like, oh, hey, a mild earthquake. That's just another Saturday for us. So Suzume then says, hey, I've always wanted to be a nurse, and I want to be a nurse. So I'm going to take you, Sota, which is now revealed to be his name at this point, and I'm going to take you home, and we're going to nurse you back to health. And he says, cool, by the way, I also kind of want to be a teacher. He doesn't say that until later on, but I'm just kind of just telling you ahead of the thing. You know, it's how this works. So They go back and she's like, hey, this is pretty cool. We're having a fun time. You're being nursed back to health. Also, there's a chair over here. It's a really, it's my chair from my childhood. It's missing a leg. And yeah, but anyways, so the cat shows up and Soda says, hey, aren't you the Keystone? And he says, hey, aren't you a chair? And he says, oops, I guess I am. And proceeds to chase the cat. And the cat has got some straight up Kyubey vibes from Madoka Magica in its appearance. I mean, not straight up, because obviously Kyubey from Madoka Magica is very just has a presence that makes you creeps you out because it's supposed to be cute. And you know at the same time that it's not really that cute by what it wants to accomplish and do. So it's just kind of those two things just clashing against each other. Meanwhile, this cat is like, I'm a cute cat. Now my eyes and my mouth are getting bigger and the perspective is changing and I look a whole lot more evil than I could ever be. And it's just, yeah. So, yeah, Chair Sota ends up chasing after the cat and then they go on a wild, wacky, fun hijinks. And during the process, Suzume ends up chasing the chair and the cat as well. And then they just kind of go off on a little road trip to go seal the doors that started with the first one. And yeah, so that's basically the core synopsis of Suzume while things happen. But I don't want to spoil them for you. So I'm just going to kind of talk about my impressions. And then I'm gonna just lapse into just a spoiler-free discussion. And then we'll wrap this all up. And then you can go home. Or if you're already home, then you can go to a different room of your house. I mean, obviously, you have to listen to the podcast while you're sitting down. That's just the rules. I don't make the rules. I just enforce them with strict and unbelievable cruelty. Anyways, so here's the thing about this entire film. Shinkai does this thing with this movie where he basically turns it into a road trip film, essentially, in a way. It's, hey, let's go to this destination. Hey, let's go to this destination. Hey, let's go to this destination. And while that's not, you know, exactly an original premise by any means, it basically is just a basic story structure. I mean, it's basically the packet you get when you decide to make a movie. It's fun. And hey, that's great. Because I'll tell you something that I didn't find fun, and that was Weathering With You. Now, Weathering With You has some funny moments and some fun moments, but not in the same way that Suzume has. Suzume has a lot of these instances where you're seeing things, you're doing things, and because there's the levity of her chasing around the chair or someone saying, hey, are you talking to that chair? It's kind of fun. And it maintains a consistent amount of humor throughout the film. And I really enjoy that. I think the chair is cute as cute as a button. Like, I know that's a hackneyed phrase, but it really is. It looks like a button. It's such a cute little chair. And maybe I'm a little bit in love with the chair because it's just such an adorable chair. I could go for a chair figure. I could get the chair figure. I would put the chair figure in my room. I don't know. So the chair is really adorable. And Suzume's kind of weird pseudo-relationship with Chair Sota is really adorable as well, because it's almost like she's acting as a motherly figure to Sota during the process of the film. She's really carrying it all the time. She's always kind of just nurturing to make sure that it doesn't do some crazy not chair stuff. So everybody goes around and says, hey, that chair just curb stomped a cat. I don't think that's very legal, and also not very grounded to how this reality has functioned to me beforehand. So it's fun. And while she does have, Suzume herself has this that classic Shinkai problem, and that she is the main character and her only personality is that she has just the skim of a beer personality. All she is she's just fluff, really and truly. She's got a personality of she misses her mom, but hey, that's basically just everybody, right? I don't know. I don't have a mommy fetish. You have a mommy fetish. Shut up. So yeah, so she's not really there to be too much of a character, which is okay, because you can have a character who's got a little bit of a personality detriment as long as everybody around her is kind of caring a little bit. And I feel like Suzume, as far as the cast of characters that surround her, including Sota's friend and her aunt, they can really pick up the movie a little bit of the slack that Suzume ends up kind of just trailing around with, because they're fun to see when they show up. And that's the thing. Sota himself, I feel like, is also a little bit vapid. He doesn't feel too much of a character as well. But then again, that's just the Shinkai formula, baby. You don't need personality when you're this pretty, says Shinkai. Because that's really the truth, isn't it? I mean, you don't need personality when you're gorgeous. Or at least that's what Shinkai's kind of telling me from these films. And that's the classic Shinkai trait, isn't it, too? this film is simply gorgeous. It is a wonderfully beautiful piece of film. Even if you're not into anime, I still think that there is a lot to this movie that is just visually pleasing. You know, there's just a style that anime always carries when it's done perfectly right that is unlike any other artistic medium. And Suzume really just is another just notch on the bedpost. Wow, go there, Fallout Boy, man. Just another notch on the bedpost of Makoto just absolutely just devastating everyone with his design and the art and all the thing that goes in there. Obviously, he doesn't make the entire film by hand, or at least I'm fairly certain he doesn't, although he directs, writes, and edits it. Jesus, man, you've been struggling over that word a lot. And also writes the light novel version of the film. But I'm fairly certain he doesn't just draw every single thing by himself, although I'm sure he has a big hand in it. A guy like that, I bet he does. I bet he can do it all. But I almost sound like I'm praising Shinkai a whole lot more than I normally do. Normally, all I do is absolutely rail on the guy, or at least rail on him as much as permitted before someone sends like a drone strike to my house. But Shinkai, his films are beautiful, and that's great because, I mean, as much as people will always say that if the story's good, then visuals really shouldn't matter as much, well, screw that, anime is a visual-based medium. That's like saying, yeah, I only care if the books should only be as good as the story, but you've got to read some writing, and if the story is basically just written in just the fourth grader's just vocabulary, then you're going to find a lot of the story is going to be stunted because you're going to have a crapshoot of just a medium. So having a beautiful anime really helps carry the story because it is visually based. And so I'm sitting there going, Shinkai, you're doing wonders for me, man. The sky's looking pretty. That worm is looking kind of pretty. Everything is looking pretty. And I am just wholly, just, I am in it. And that said, going back to my story and visual thing, you got to have a good story too. You can't just be pretty all around and no story. I'm not being that unreasonable. But when the visuals are this gorgeous, you can kind of slack a little bit, just a tiny bit. And Suzume, I feel like in several regards, does exactly that. It becomes a road trip story. We go from place to place and see things to things. And speaking of the things we see a lot, I noticed on my second rewatch, I noticed it on my first rewatch, or my first watch, but not as prevalent as on my second one, because in my second one, I'm being all like, anime critic. Me, an anime critic. This anime no good. No good anime. On my second rewatch, I was like, Jesus, that the product placement. The Spotify, the McDonald's. I mean, this is anime, Shinkai. You can just say WickDonald's. We get it. We know where you're at. You can call it McDanny's. You can call it WickDoodads. You can call it McDoodles. We are okay with it. We know what you mean. McDonald's is okay. They're going to make more money. They don't need to be in this film. Spotify doesn't need to be in this film. Did you just want to make it as spectacular as you could? So you just absolutely got as many sponsors as you could? It feels like that because there are a lot of, outside of those two, there were little moments of sponsorship. I said, that's not necessary. I don't think it is. But hey, I guess if you're just gonna make a movie and just make it the most beautiful belle at the ball, then I suppose you might as well just whore her out for a little bit too, so you can make her the extra most beautiful belle at all the balls. So yeah, that's just one little tiny nitpick of my actually few nitpicks, which is so odd. Because this movie isn't doing anything new for a story. I mean, Sota and his family situation, which I'm trying not to spoil. I'm not going to spoil till we get to the spoiler section. But Sota and his family situation is, I've never heard this before. That's wild. That's so wild. Sota and his family are like that. And they're tasked with this. And no, oh wow, he's saving us from underground. So wild, an unappreciated hero. Yeah, no, I've seen that before. But just the film itself is so visually impactful, and not in that meaningful sort of like, what do these visuals mean? But just that my brain is going, dang, this is so miraculously beautiful to look at. So it kind of gets a little bit of a pass, or at least I feel like it gets a little bit of a pass. But overall, the story doesn't tread any ground that hasn't been tread a billion times by feet that look better than what Shinkai is working with. Or at least story chops. I mean, like, again, beautiful movie. That's just what I'm saying here. So, what does it mean? What does it matter? What does it matter if this is just another Shinkai film, except now it is classic story protocol Alpha 2, where it is road trip and we learn and bond with each other through road trip. I mean, it does have a somewhat plot twist that occurs midway through. Honestly, the movie feels like it's going to wind down halfway through and then just be a sad little story. And that's kind of where I thought it was going to go. I thought Shinkai was just going to wrap it up there and the midway point would be the end of the movie and we would be sad and we would go home and we'd all learn that loving was what we really wanted to do with ourselves. But Shinkai said, nope, I make selfish characters. My characters would never let that happen. And I was like, oh God, we're gonna fucking flood Tokyo again. Please save me. And I was kind of expecting that the whole time. And that's another thing, is I am not sure if Shinkai has a Shinkai-verse yet. Weathering With You kind of thought made me think there was a Shinkai-verse. But I think that's also why I'm not a big fan of Weathering You, because that the cameo appearance in that made me just go, oh, for Christ's sake, why are you doing this? And then the ending happened to Weathering With You, and I said, oh, for Christ's sake, why did you do that? But that's for the Weathering With You episode, which will happen never. Probably. Maybe. So, yeah. So, Suzume isn't doing anything new with the story. And when the midway point happens and the story keeps going, I said, oh, well, I guess the road trip still goes. And the people we thought were bad were good. And the people we thought were good were still good, but different now. And, I mean, I didn't hate it. I liked the little road trip sequences that occurred afterwards. I thought it was fun. The locking up the door sequences were always so spectacular. And I love a good starry sky in an anime. I don't know what it is about starry skies, particularly in the anime medium. But whenever I see a starry sky in an anime, I'm like, oh, that sky's so pretty. Such a pretty sky. And Suzume just seems to, in the ever after sequences, just say, hey, the world is beautiful, isn't it? And I say, Shinkai, you know what, my bud? It is, isn't it? And he says, you darn right it is. And then we have a little magical fist bump. You would have to been there. It's kind of a hit me and him thing. But, you know, you could be on it too, regardless. So there's a lot working for this film that works for me visually, even if the story's not going anywhere fantastically revolutionary. And that's okay. The second half comes, the second half goes, and all in all, the story is predictable. It doesn't go anywhere that's outside of a few instances, go anywhere that makes you just go, oh. But I don't think it's supposed to do that. I'm not sure. It's not like a Your Name thing where the twist happens, everything is revealed, and then you're just shook. Or a Weathering With You thing where the ending happens and you're shook, or you're me and you get mad. But it tries to be, and the sequence where the inevitable plot twist is revealed does kind of sting, and that's why it makes you think that the ending's going to come early, but it doesn't. And then the movie goes on, and at that point, the movie, I feel like, does kind of slope off until we finally get to the final sequence, where it suddenly, honestly, kind of feels Miyazakian. I'm going to call it Miyazakian. Miyazaki-esque. Miyazakian. That's what I'm going to say from now on. It sort of feels Miyazakian in a way. And the ending sequence does, in my opinion. And that's another thing that kind of felt weird to me, is that it feels like this movie is trying to be Whispers of the Heart. I don't know. I've never seen that movie. I actually have it on Blu-ray when we were doing the Miyazaki month stuff, but I did that and did not realize that that was not by Miyazaki, and proves that I am a colossal dunderhead. So now I have a copy of Whispers of the Heart, Whispers from the Heart, whatever. Whispers in the Heart, Whispers by the Heart, Whispers. You just throw in whatever, thing you want there. So it kind of, is it supposed to like harken back to that? Is it supposed to be like Shinkai just doing a nod to it? I'll never know, because as we all know, I'm bad at watching anime, but maybe I'll get there someday. Hopefully. If every time I say that I haven't seen something, somebody slides in my DMs and says, hey, you should watch that. And I go, I will. And then I don't. But maybe this time I will actually do it. You could be the one to change my mind. I mean, you could be. I believe in you. You're great, listener. You're great. You got through this far. I don't know how long we are in the episode, but you did great. to get this far. So speaking of things that are great to get so far, by the end of the movie, when everything is tied up and I'm left there sitting going, dang, this hurts a little bit, I actually felt more emotional resonance than any other Shinkai film up to this point. Even 5 centimeters per second. While 5 centimeters per second has this thing about being very melancholic, and I don't know if you know, but that's kind of my thing. So it's got the, comparatively, I was more invested with Suzume than any other film of his. And so I was just, when the ending all tied together and we got to our credits, I really said, oh yeah, I really like this film. I really, really, really like this film. And I struggled with scoring it. But we'll get to that in the final thoughts and opinions. Right now, we're going to do a spoiler dissection. So if you're not wanting to have this movie ruined for you for any reason and just want to figure out what I feel about it, then you can skip to 52 minutes and 20 seconds and find out for yourself. So let's just go ahead and just say that the reveal that you are now the Keystone was such a weird gut punch. I mean, it's not like, like I said earlier, it's not like a thing that's just, what? But for, at this point, for the smug kitty to say, yeah, I got you now, boo-boo, and just say, you the Keystone, goodbye. It really was kind of a gut punch because you don't want Soda to go with this. The classic story of the road trip is that by doing the road trip, the characters bond and grow to each other. And for as brief as the road trip is at this point, the fun little moments the Sota and Suzume had together really made me go, yeah, okay, they're fun. I like it. Riding the chair around, it's a robot. The chair, it's just fun. It was fun to me at this point. So I did feel like there was a bit of a connection to them, at least a little bit, to where I might be sad that the chair got sealed in a glacier after we're going to lock up this Keystone. So for all that to happen and then it to be revealed that he has to sacrifice himself, I almost had Weathering With You PTSD vibes. I was so frightened that it was going to go in a similar vein to Weathering With You, and I said, Shinkai, man, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't make me hate this movie after all we've gone through, man. And he said, I don't know. And then the movie kept on going. And when the movie kept on going, I said, oh, dear, I don't know how long this movie is on my first watch. I said, oh, no, it's going to be another 2.5 hours Shinkai epic, and I'm going to be in this theater going, just let it die. But that was not the case, because then the movie continued and became more of a road trip where the aunt kind of revealed herself because another kitty cat came in and said, hey, this is how you kind of actually feel, doesn't it? And the aunt says, yeah, I guess I do. Which, goodness, I don't have, earlier in this episode, I said I don't have mommy issues, but my gosh, the aunt is, geez. So when, what is it, guy, I was going to call his Daijin, I forget the name, I should have seen this movie, it is Daijin, why did I doubt myself? I always doubt myself in this podcast, I'll always be like, oh, I don't remember what it is, and then it is the first thing I said it was. Anyway, so when Daijin kind of just lapses and becomes skinny after Suzume rejects him, I honestly did feel a little bit bad for the dude, although at this point he'd been a colossal prick by routinely going, hey, door open, vroom, and then Sota and Suzume had to throw themselves to stop the door, especially with that Ferris wheel sequence. That Ferris wheel sequence was a whole lot of fun and a half for me personally. I thought it was a treat to see. And I think maybe that's why I think it's such a great movie, because I just loved that Ferris wheel sequence. It's nothing extraordinarily just there, but it is still really cool. And the Tokyo sequence too with the door. That was whew. Maybe I just have a door fetish. Maybe that's what this all is. Maybe I have like a locking up door fetish. And this is why I think this movie was so good and why it hit with me so hard. So what else is there to talk about now that I'm kind of just having a little second to think about it? I think the final sequence where we do actually get to see some more about the tragedy of Suzume's life and her mother and all that, that was really heart-wrenching. And until I watched it the second time, then I finally realized that, oh, this is supposed to be a statement on an actual event that happened, particularly the 2011 East Tokyo disaster or whatever. I barely skimmed the Wikipedia article when I was reading through it. I'm sorry, people of Japan, but so there is actually a statement on tragedy and how it affects people, which I was actually kind of what stirred me a little bit at the end. When the ending finally reveals itself, as endings typically do, and we find out that the woman that little kid Suzume saw was not actually her mom, but in fact herself, and she says that touching little lines about, I'm the you in the future, of you of tomorrow. I can't even remember, but it was so touching. It was so oddly just heart-wrenching for me, and I can't even clarify why I was so devastated by that scene. Maybe it's because it's kind of one of those things that's more about self-improvement and about getting over things and about overcoming your trials and being stronger. Maybe it's a little bit of a statement on not wholly relying on others, but that you make your tomorrow and that is what you should try to strive for. I don't know, but it really, really, really hurt. And at that point, I was kind of just detached from Sota. I said, yeah, you can be with the chair if you want to, Suzume, but love yourself, girl. Love yourself. And that's when I was just really, just the message itself just hurt. It hurt. And it's not like there weren't moments in Your Name and 5 cm/s that really kind of just hit me in the feels hard, but never to the degree to what this movie, with how it performed with me internally. Because on top of that, you have these touching scenes with the aunt who, you know, obviously has a connection to Suzume. And when Evil Daijin or East Daijin, whatever, I don't remember the name of the thing. Sai Daijin? It's not Sai Daijin. What was it called, Matt? Sai Daijin? Sai Daijin? It is not Sai Daijin. It is definitely not Sai Daijin. Plot twist, it actually was Sai Daijin. I don't know why. Again, this is maybe the message of this podcast, the entirety of Otaku Melancholy, is for me not to doubt myself. Who knows? So that was just... this is good stuff, really and truly. I don't know why it resonated so hard with me, involving the circumstance with the aunt. It wasn't just because I had a little boy crush on her, but it was just, I can feel where the bitterness would lie in the aunt character, and I can understand why she would treat and handle things, or at least comprehend them on her emotional state. I get why she feels the way she feels when she has her Sai Daijin breakdown. I get it. I don't think anyone can overly fault the aunt for the feelings that she has, especially because Suzume just does end up being the Makoto Shinkai teenager character and just doing what she wants and living freely in a way, and just kind of disregards her guardian, which really, not that I am a guardian of anything outside of a cat, and she's the best cat in the tri-state area, but I mean, I'm never going to have that sort of resonating connection with what it's like to raise a kid that just does kid stuff, but I can get why the aunt feels such resentment, and when she kind of gets her persona awakened, as it were, I really kind of felt for her. And I had this weird thing where I totally thought she and the Sato's classmate, I thought that they had some weird chemistry that I was a little bit uncomfortable with. As someone who's currently playing Persona 5, I was like, oh goodness, it's Kawakami vibes all over again. But still, I was kind of like, I don't know, kind of, maybe it'd be better than if she got with the dude who's obviously creeping and crushing on her in that way that only people can creep and crush on in anime. But I mean, if people did that in real life, it'd be a little bit weird. Anyway, so the final sequences that end up occurring with the fight with the worm, I can't recall it ever getting an entity name, like the sin, the cursed, the bringer. It was just, the worm will get out and it will screw over Japan. And I'm like, okay, I get it. I'm supposed to read in to the worm. I'm supposed to kind of inflect on what it is. And I can see now after we get revealed what Sato's family are, the secret that they keep and all that, I see that there's a little bit of a message about appreciating the people that we don't see, who do the things that matter the most. I can kind of get that there's a message about that within Suzume. But the worm just being the worm and having no real, like, connotations, I feel like, as an entity that's dangerous. It's just the worm. And if it gets out, then we're going to be screwed. So every time there's an earthquake in Japan, I'm supposed to blame these people because they didn't perform their job correctly. I don't know what the message is supposed to be there. But I really thought that the worm had something underneath it that I'm supposed to look into. Or maybe that's just Makoto Shinkai just pulling a mirror up, going to the TV, to the theater, saying, "What do you think the worm was?" And I said, "I don't know. This, I mean, again, it looks like some gore screaming show stuff. I don't know." But overall, I really did. I really kind of liked that, actually. It wasn't exactly explicitly spelled out that here is the worm. And as for that, I'm also glad that it doesn't explicitly just break down the Ever After and break down like into almost a Jujutsu Kaisen levels of just, this is how the Ever After works. This is just the Ever After. And that in itself, there feels a lot more Miyazaki in this film than any of the big Shinkai works. It honestly kind of has that mystical nature that Miyazaki can infuse with a lot of his films. It really does feel like Suzume leans more into that than the other two. But again, we don't really necessarily know why the meteor in Your Name did what it did, and we don't really know too much about some of the circumstances of Weathering With You, especially why a man would do that to Tokyo. Not that I'm mad about that or anything, but this one really did just slide into that sort of mystical nature that I feel like can really be the charming factor, or part of the charming factor in Miyazaki's films. And I liked that. I liked The Ever After. I liked The Worm. I liked these things. I liked Daijin and Sadajin. There's so much that I like. They're not, they're a little bit shallow, but they're just facets of this world, facets of this life. And so, you know, things in life don't always have that hard, concrete explanation. They just are. And I kind of like that. But again, I was so charmed by this movie over the other films I had seen by him that I feel like when I kind of had to reassess my bias on this movie, I felt like maybe my score is too high, and maybe there are just core elements of this movie that have won me over specifically because they entertain me, and I'm not giving it a fair assessment. I don't know, but I'm not an actual critic. I don't actually get, you know, paid dollars to do this in a way to where it's like, oh yes, Matt must say what Matty thinks. Yes, go Matty, go. No. So it's not like any of my opinions are professional, but when the ending does kind of lapse into your dying throes of any movie like this, where Sato and Suzume have their moment, they have their obligatory Shinkai moment where they say that they're going to meet up again and that they'll be together, and then it's kind of like, oh wait a minute, Sato's in college, and I'm just like, oh, we'll just kind of ignore that fact. I mean, it's only like 3 years, that's okay, right? Looks around awkwardly in the theater. That's all right. Speaking of which, every time I saw this film, it was in an empty theater, so Crunchyroll, how's that going for you? Not that I particularly care, since you'll be closing down Princess Connect soon. So all the more struggles for you, Crunchyroll. It's your boy Matt. It's your boy Matt Crunchyroll. Yeah, it's still got screw yourself. Anyways, and I wonder how we alienate people with kind of statements like that. Anyways, so we get into the final throes of, yes, Suzume, we'll meet again soon. And Suzume goes, "Uba, Sato is so kawaii desu." And there we go. Then we get the little montage of them going back home. And I gotta say that I really, really, just hearkening back to something I think I said, or maybe I'm just imagining this. Maybe this whole podcast is imagination. But I really also like the environments in this particular. Now, Your Name, half of it took place in Tokyo, and Weathering With You took place a good bit in what I can remember being Tokyo. I mean, I feel like every time I make a bold statement about something of this nature, I end up getting it wrong. But anyways, my point being is that I liked that Suzume was really a little bit less a little bit less city focused, and a little bit more on the small towns, and a little bit on the areas that make up little nice homes in Japan. I like that it wasn't just pure Tokyo, pure all the time. it was a little bit about the surrounding areas. And I guess, you know, that makes sense because it was about a tragedy that impacted people on a bigger scale. And so maybe that's kind of what Shinkai was trying to do, saying that there are people all across the world and all across Japan. Shinkai don't really care too much about anything that's not Japan, let's be honest here. So maybe that was kind of the point he was making, that there are people across Japan, there's people all over who have lives and that they're impacted by the decisions you make and by the decisions that are made. But I also feel like Shinkai was also a little bit saying about, you know, the people that do their jobs that you don't see, they are helping to make the world that you do see. I do see. I made myself laugh about something that I'm not going to say out loud. So I like the messages about that Shinkai really had here. There's a whole lot of, a little bit you can read into it as much as you want. And I always love anything that does that. Where, yeah, there's a message there, but I'm not going to shove it down your throat. But if you want to look into it, it's there. And maybe it be thinly veiled. Maybe it be just you have to go through almost some thick miasma to determine what the message is. But Shinkai has said, yes, there are things in this movie that you could think about, but they're not going to be too deep to where you've got to be thinking all afternoon. So I really appreciate that that's what this movie is bringing to the table. There's so many things about this movie that I wholeheartedly appreciate. One more thing is being that the soundtrack still is... If there's anything that I will never cry foul about a Shinkai film, the soundtrack still absolutely slays in every single way possible. Rad Wimps again doing a little bit of their magic. Absolutely killer soundtrack. I mean, I feel like you have to say something about these soundtracks every time. They're always just perfect angel's kiss of just everything. I am by no means a music expert, but I do know when I see expert music... And there's a lot going on in Suzume that just works so well. There's just a myriad of musical pieces that I really loved. And, you know, if it's great music, you will generally notice it. But if it's bad music, you'll definitely notice it. But Suzume has so many tracks and it's so much of the soundtrack just works so well that I'm noticing it and also not noticing it at the same time. All around, there's so much about this movie that I oddly feel like I have to praise. Because I just enjoyed it way much more than I thought I would. Because I'm a little bit of a picky dicky when it comes to anything Shinkai does. Mostly just because, again, weathering with you, I didn't like that very much at all. But this film, to me, was a little bit of a redemption. And you know what? Let's just go ahead and talk about our final thoughts and final reviews. Because I don't think there's much more I'm going to really get by talking about spoilers. So let's just go ahead and get to it. Suzume, do I recommend it? Yes, absolutely. Do I think it is going to be a revolutionary film that will stand the test of time and still be just wholly relevant in maybe 10 years? I do not know, because constantly it will live in the shadow of Your Name, which will capture more people, has seemed to capture more people. And Suzume, while it has a lot working for it for me, and I enjoy a whole lot of it, I don't know if in 10 years, by 10 years' time, will Shinkai just put out some more masterpieces or he'll put out something that will just overshadow Your Name. I don't know. I really don't. But I just can't see Suzume being one of the big films of 2023. Or not 2023, but rather the 2020s. I just don't know. But I'm also unsure. There's so much that could come out in 2020s. And maybe there's just a lot of things that have to live in the shadows of other films in this time that I just can't make a fair claim about that. But I really, really, really enjoyed Suzume, and I actually do really recommend it. It hit hard with me. It resonated on a grand level for me. There was a lot of the film that was really visually striking that is common in Shinkai's, you know, new works. But still, there was a lot of these set pieces that were hard not to get invested in. And the characters, while they're kind of milquetoast in a good bit of ways, at least the main two characters, it was still cute to see the relationship between girl and chair, or girl butt and chair. It was cute. There were a lot of cute moments between Suzume and Sato, and I kind of skimmed over that a lot in discussing the film, but if Suzume and Sato didn't have some sort of cute chemistry, then when things happen as they happen, there would be no stakes or no real reason to have sort of a dread when things go down. but they do have a cute little quirky connection, and that makes it fun. That's part of the fun as they go on their little road trip. And I like that. There's so much about this film that I like. I'm not madly in love with, but I like. And not having anything just overwhelmingly throw me off or just rustle my feathers, just crush my jimmies, anything like that, is really cool, I feel like. So yeah, I can wholeheartedly recommend this film. It's beautiful. The characters are cute. Soundtrack is obviously killer. I mean, that thing is going to be wanted in like so many states and countries. It's so killer. And it will kill again. So there's just so much about this film that I really, really like. And on my first watch, I was so just enamored with the film that I said, I think I'm going to have to give it a 10 when I first came out. And that was obviously a huge unfair score because I saw it again and I was like, oh, no way, that's not a masterpiece by any means. That's not a perfect 10 out of 10. Maybe that's why we gotta eliminate that recency bias. We gotta curb that right now. But after seeing it again and kind of ruminating and thinking about it all in all, I said, you know what? Definitely not a 10. Not by any means. But maybe it's just a soft 9 for me. For me, it's a soft 9. Something that I really, really enjoyed. I could watch again and still get a huge amount of pleasure and just joy from seeing. But as I mentioned earlier, will it be something that's still relevant in 10 years? We can never really know. But I would say if it had any relevancy, it would never even hope to broach as much as Your Name does. And I just can't see it on that level. But hey, I have no way to ever just control the future or be future proof. Although right now, as of when this podcast is recording, it is currently the fourth highest grossing Japanese film behind Your Name and Spirited Away and Demon Slayer, the movie Mugen Train. The fact that Demon Slayer, Mugen Train is number one still mildly rustles me, but that's just me being me. And I don't know, Spirited Away, come on, that's Spirited Away. But maybe it will be, and maybe I'm wrong. It is a really good movie. It is a great movie. So I'm open to being wrong is wrong, and that Suzume maintains like it gets a spot and huge relevant works, and it's not just another a director causing a huge boom for his works because he just knocked out of the park with one film. But it gets a soft 9 from me. Go and see it if you have a chance to. I think you'll at least have fun with it and enjoy it. That's all I can really confirm. That's what I think, at least. But hey, take from this episode what you will. And if you don't want to take anything from it, that's fine. But if you do want to take something from it, then take this. You're great, and thank you for listening. This has been the Otaku Melancholy Podcast. You can go to our website at otakumelancholy.com to see all our links, including links to our social media like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can even join the Discord if you want to hang out and see if you'll just weather with us or lock up all the doors or just figure out our name. Whatever, that was a lame thing, Matt. But if you really want to support us and help make this podcast super extra special, then you can also go to patreon.com/otakumelancholy and support us, as mentioned, for as little as $3 a month to get bonus content and your name shouted out. Anime of the Week, Chris S., Cream Puff Coon, Darth Egg, Earthworm the Anime Brother, IKEA Plant, Jalvin, and Steered Marlin for helping to support this episode. You guys help so much with everything just running smoothly, and it means a whole lot. But also, thank you for listening to this episode. I hope that you enjoyed it and that you had a great time, or at least you had a time in this kill time. Regardless, thank you for listening to the episode. It means a whole lot. Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care. And Ganbatte.